Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Driving for work is a double-edged sword. Either you're spending too much time tracking every single mile, or you're guesstimating and you end up losing money. If you're driving for work and aren't already using MileIQ, then you are losing money fast. MileIQ is the number one mileage tracker app. More than a million Americans trust MileIQ to automatically log their drives every single day. MileIQ is the only mileage tracker app that detects, logs, and calculates your drives for you automatically, and it is incredibly easy to use. In fact, the average MileIQ user logs $547 a month in drives. That's over $6,000 a year in miles that you could be claiming. Stop wasting time manually tracking your miles and stop losing money that you should be redeeming. Go right now, pick up your phone, and text HTE to 31996, and you will start your 40-drive free trial immediately. And if you create an account this week, you'll get an additional 20% off on an annual plan. That's texting HTE to 31996.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now, here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a former punk rocker, one-time vegan grocer, and entrepreneur who starts companies that he wish existed. When he was 17 years old, my guest opened a grocery store that sold vegan food upstairs and put punk shows on in the basement. He's also the co-founder of screen printing maverick VG Kids, whose clients include Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz, IBM, Converse, and Nike. He is now co-founder of Whiplash, the Airbnb of product fulfillment. He stumbled into fulfillment when his friend, the tour manager for the band Modest Mouse, asked him to run the band's web store. With a client list consisting mainly of bands and independent music labels, Whiplash has grown its revenue to nearly $4 million annually. Now, let's hack James Marks. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Colony FM. Now, if you are like me, there are just way too many blogs and articles out there to possibly read them all. Thankfully, there's a new app called Colony FM, which uses voice actors to narrate great articles and blog posts. What's really cool about using Colony FM is that they actually use a real person to read, and that's the key. There are other services out there that are using Siri or their robotic voices, but it's just not the same, and it can get annoying pretty darn quick. The readers on Colony FM sound like living, breathing, warm-blooded human beings. And when you close your eyes, it's like having your own personal secretary. Whether you are in the car, in the office, washing dishes, or just hanging out, nothing is easier or more soothing than having a real person do your reading for you. Go to colony.fm/hack right now to get the service completely and absolutely free. It's available on the web, on the App Store, and in the Google Play Store. That's colony.fm/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure, man. I think this is going to be a blast.
Good, good. Let's do it, man.
All right. James, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
You know, if we have to go with one thing, of course I want to list three things. I think the one thing is that I'm really stubborn, which is hard in the beginning because you can really latch in on bad ideas and it's hard to know when to back off those. But I think like investing in a business and building a business, the feedback that you get and the good things that are going to happen to you are so far out in the beginning. Like you might, you know, meet somebody at a party and they might like the pitch, and then it might be a year until that comes back around. And if you aren't kind of dug in, you're not going to be there when that person calls you and to reap that benefit. That's the biggest thing that I've seen, is just being stubborn enough to stick around for good things to happen.
Wow. And that's so true. And so people have a negative connotation, right, towards stubbornness?
Sure. And so it can be really bad, right? Like sometimes you can be really stubborn about the wrong thing. So I mean, is patience a better word for it?
And I like stubborn.
Stubborn.
Because I've used it before, and I fully agree, because you have this idea that you want to create something out of nothing, this business or this service, whatever it happens to be, but you have to, you're right, the good feedback is a long ways off.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to stubbornly believe that is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be obstinate to even have the thought that something could exist that doesn't, right? That's like an inherently disagreeable idea that you're like, oh, this is how it should be, right? That's you're already going against the grain just to even have that thought. And I think, you know, like I said, like, and I think it's cumulative, right? Like there are, like if every time you go out into the world, there are, you're building this goodwill and these good things that are going to come, but they're going to come over the space of years. And so in the beginning, you might get one, you know, it kind of trickles in, but as you stayed in business longer and longer, it starts to pour in. And now it's like, there's like a constant, you know, reaping of that benefit. I think that's actually how businesses grow, is that you're just in business long enough and making people happy enough that those, that trickle turns into like a steady stream and then like a waterfall of like good things that are always happening, right?
Yeah, totally. So you've been in business a long time now, 20 years, I believe. So let's go back if we can, because looking back, there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things, it seems, either that they had this calling originally to make this huge difference in the world, or they find that they're simply unemployable and cannot work for somebody else anymore. So James, I would love to know which side of the fence you see yourself on, and then take us back to when you discovered this about yourself.
I think my path towards being unemployable happened gradually. I think I was actually employable until I was about 23, and that's when that switch happened. You know, opening my business for my first business, it wasn't even supposed to be a business, right? I was 17. I was playing in bands. I was, you know, going on tour and, you know, very strongly steeped in this punk rock ecosystem. And, you know, my first business was just like putting on shows and printing t-shirts for those bands. And, like, you didn't really think about it as a business. It was more of a way to contribute to this community, right? And like just to be a part of that band's story. Like, oh my God, we made their t-shirts. And like, yeah, we had to charge them money, but it was more like, well, of course we had to charge money. We had to buy the t-shirts and ink, and I'm like, you didn't even pay yourself, you know? And somehow that gradually shifted. And by the time I was 20, you know, having a family, trying to be like, oh, well, I don't really like being super, super poor. So how are we going to reconcile these things? And eventually that kind of transitioned into being just in business.
And so it started off with you putting on shows and making t-shirts for people. And then that moved into a grocery store, I believe.
Yeah. So it's actually all those things at once. So the idea was, we're going to get this building in like the ghetto of downtown Pontiac, Michigan. And the idea of having my own building was just like intoxicating, because we could do whatever we wanted, right? And so we were going to have shows. We sold groceries in the front. We put records out. We made piercing jewelry. It was just like whatever we wanted to do, we now had this platform to do it. And that was just like, It was cool. I mean, it was like Field of Dreams, you know? And then like, we're like, we're going to build this place and all the kids are going to come to our house. And like, that was a lot of fun. It was not sustainable at a business level at all. And it partially was just like my obstinance. I was like, we're not going to keep a profit and loss. That's for the man, you know? In fact, I'm not even going to fully learn what that term means, because that's the man. And so what I've learned since then is like, you know, the things that you don't monitor tend to trend poorly. And so cash flow being one of those things, you're going to go out of business if you don't watch it. Yeah.
So I was really hoping that you were going to say that you're doing like millions of dollars in revenue now and still are completely against profit and loss statements.
No. Profit and loss is your friend.
Exactly.
It's your friend. It's the one thing that you can look at that's just like, hey, here's the numbers. Don't shoot the messenger. This is what's happening in your company. And what I eventually learned over time, and I was reticent to admit this, is that financial freedom is, you know, freedom in life. And that I had this idea that I was just going to pursue my projects and not worry about the money. And what that means is that you don't have money to pursue your projects. And so it was this shift that happened in my early 20s. I was like, all right, fuck it. We're going to have to make a bunch of money, and then we can do all the cool stuff that we want to do. The rub, and maybe this is what happens to every good person who ends up the bad person, or at least, you know, a villain in the movies, is the things you have to do to make that money, you aren't the same person on the other side of it, right? You don't have the same beliefs you did in the beginning. I don't think I'm fully on the other side yet, but I'm very aware of it, and maybe more adverse to risk. And like, whereas before, like, if I had $10,000, I would, you know, open a skate park and my, you know, everybody skated for free. And now I'm like, if I had $10,000, I should invest it in the business. And make, you know, go crash in 6 months, you know. I should probably just save that $10,000.
Yeah, so it's funny, right? Well, and it's part of it, right? It's part of just life. I mean, it's not just business at that point. It's literally you. You change as you go through things.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. And I fully agree that the business should be, this is what I talk about in lifestyle business, as in you should make sure that the business is something, though, that doesn't completely run your life after you've created it.
Yeah.
Because then it doesn't matter what kind of money you make. And you,
I don't know how to do that, by the way.
Well, not that we know how to do it, but at least if you're, at least I think, conscious of it heading into it, and don't just let it so that you come out the other side and all of a sudden you have a suit and tie on and you're like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Then it's like, yeah. What happened?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I've tried to make sure that I maintain my identity as we go through this, partially because it's what makes you have like a unique perspective on the world and makes you do well in business, right?
Exactly.
If you're another guy in a suit, then you just lost your individuality and like your market niche, if you will. Yeah. So I think, I don't even know. It's like you're punished for trying to fit in anyway. So I don't know that it's even a good strategy.
Exactly. All right, James, at the beginning, you told me your one thing is obstinance and being stubborn. So work your way through. So now every business expert out there talks this whole 80-20 rule. So do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at in your business and delegate the rest. James, can you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Let's see. Absolutely not good at. There's so many to choose from. You know, I have a problem because of my issues with authority. I have a problem filing tax returns on time and making sure our bookkeeping is done accurately. And that was one of the critical early things that I had to delegate. Not only delegate, but with a warning that's like, okay, here's this job. I will try to fight you. I will try to deprioritize it. Don't let that happen. I mean, it's sort of like in Fight Club where it's like, it might be me that comes and tries to take your job away.
And don't listen to me.
And don't listen to me, right? It's critical to our success that you do not listen to me. And I'm going to tell you this 941 payment isn't that big of a deal and we can blow it off. We'll all go to jail. Don't listen to me. Well, maybe not all of us. I will go to jail.
Wow.
So, yeah, bookkeeping.
So did you realize this before going into Whiplash? Did you learn this in like previous businesses? And then this was something immediately you're like, we have to get this off my plate.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I mean, it was at VG Kids, my last company, that I got in trouble with the IRS. There's one point where the IRS shows up at your door in like a pink polo golf shirt. And they're like, hi, is James Marks here? And you're like, James, there's somebody here to see you.
Wearing a pink polo shirt.
A pink polo shirt, which is not a good sign.
In so many ways, it's not a good sign.
And so I go out and like, obviously, like I've got like my mohawk and like whatever, a very small business mohawk, but still.
Yeah.
And they're just like super polite. And they're like, well, you owe us about $40,000. And if you can't make a payment today that makes me feel like you're gonna be able to make the rest of the payments, we're going to come back tomorrow with a padlock. And they're just so polite about the entire thing. And like, we're going to stop your business operations immediately. So what can we do today? You know, that all happened at my last company, VG Kids. And through that experience, which we eventually resolved and others like it, went into Whiplash with a stronger understanding of myself and my own weaknesses and making sure that that got off my plate, you know, from day one.
So did that end VG Kids for you?
No, not at all.
No. Okay. So that's cool.
Yeah. So VG Kids just celebrated its 15-year anniversary. I no longer am part of daily operations, but we took 3 employees, gave them some equity, and it's an exemplary business. You know, VG Kids makes me very proud. And they actually run it much better than I do. They do not have the IRS showing up on their door. And I think that says something about my personality. I think I'm better at starting companies and getting from 0 to 1 and 1 to whatever, or even just maintaining a healthy business. That's not really my game. And they do a much better job of that. And they've got better personalities for that.
Yeah. But that's interesting because that's people's, probably one of their greatest fears is that the IRS shows up at your door in a pink polo shirt and says you owe this much money. And that's when this whole thing in the back of your head comes like, I shouldn't be running a business. I should just be working for somebody. Right? So
yeah.
Does
I mean, So there is that time where which I really didn't see coming. I didn't have a healthy fear of the IRS until, and you know, my dad we'd always try. My dad is totally risk adverse, always worked for big corporations when that was seen as the safe thing to do. And he would tell me, he was like, the IRS, these are the people who put Al Capone away. You do not mess with the IRS. And I just didn't get it. I was just like, yeah, whatever, old man. And I didn't get it until that day. I was like, padlocks? They can do that? Like, what do you mean?
So at that point, though, like when that happens, did you then, how long did it take from them knocking on your door to realizing that this is a real fear and that this is something that you need to take serious?
Oh, that was instant.
That was instant.
That was instant. So that we were very fortunate. So that was in 2003, and it was a weird time. Fiji Kids was growing really fast. We had won this national contract for an organization called MoveOn.org, who was just spending tons of money for the 2004 presidential election. And they had hired us for this huge contract. We were in the news because it was such a big deal for us. And I think it was actually because we were in the news that it got the IRS like, oh, we should go check on them. But then it also meant that we happened to have a tiny bit of money, or money that we wouldn't have usually had. So when they're like, what check can you write me today so that I don't shut you down? We could write them, you know, like a 10%, 20%, something that they could see we were meaningful about it, and then start like a 2-year payment plan or whatever. I mean, I think it's like anything, like the fear of the thing is bigger than the thing itself, and that you have to just look it straight on. I think that was something that maybe I still do sometimes, where you're so worried about something, you don't want to confront it. And then you like push it further and further back. And like once you like square your shoulders and stare it down, it's a solvable problem. And I think most problems are.
It's just we kind of deny it.
Yeah, yeah. We don't even acknowledge it. And I think I've had the same problem socially, where you just like sort of have this anxiety. Like I'm not a natural like party person. Like if I walk into a room with people I don't know, I tend to close up. And some part of me, I finally figured out when we moved to the Bay Area 4 years ago, I didn't know anyone. I would go to some of these, like, you know, somebody you get invited to like a company party or whatever. And what I finally figured out was that it was fear that was preventing me from having these like positive conversations or any conversations. And I was like, oh, well, fear, I know what you do with fear. Fear, you like put your shoulders back, you look it in the eye, and it kind of goes away. And so it was my party strategy that year was to find the most beautiful people in the room, be them men or women. And like, I couldn't leave until I went and talked to them. Because once you're afraid of it, once you recognize that it's fear, it's so easy just to push past it because it's actually probably not that bad, right? And like, it's like I wasn't able to put it in the context that I needed to understand how to react, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. I love it. And so you overcame that now?
Well, I think it's not. Process of overcoming.
Okay, cool. Because I was going to say, like, have you moved on to, like, are you now the person that, well, that's, I've overcome that fear, now put another fear in front of me and I'm going to deal with that one?
I think the skill that I've learned is when to recognize that I'm dodging something because I'm afraid of it, and to acknowledge it. And once you acknowledge it, then fine. Then we can put it on the table and we can deal with it, you know?
Yeah. Fair enough. So you said that you think you are better at starting companies going from 0 to 1. You have a quote on your Twitter bio, which I absolutely love, that you start companies that I wish existed, which is really, really cool. So let's move to projects. So projects can be either like a new way you want to take, or something you want to take on within Whiplash, or even when you started Whiplash, or when you want to start a new project or a new company from 0 to 1. However you want to take this, but you, James, as the entrepreneur, I'm sure that being in the Bay Area, being at business parties, doing what you're doing with Whiplash and getting out there, that there are opportunities that come to you. And I would love to know how you, whether it's like a written process or if it's in your gut, but how do you determine that a project is worth your time, energy, and resources right now?
Oh, man, that's an always evolving one. I think I've actually been struggling with this lately, because over the last few years, I got very cold about that decision-making process. And, you know, looking at it like, okay, my time is worth X dollars an hour to the company, and I have to make sure that I'm working on projects that are in line with that, right? Like, is this activity does it have the potential to make more than I make an hour, right? Otherwise, it's not going to be profitable. And I think that works to a degree. You know, if you're looking at like how many people are going to be affected by this, right? If we do a great job, how many people are going to be thrilled, and how much money is that going to earn for the company? The thing that ends up happening, though, is you only work on pretty cold boring things, and you're never going to, you know, make a beautiful piece of art thinking like that. So I don't know. I don't actually know. Don't know the other side of it right now. I only know that I'm sort of stuck because of that hyper-analytical, rational thinking leads a very boring, unsatisfactory life.
Yeah, you're totally right. And does it also lead to boredom and stagnation within the company, or does it work as a project?
So I think, you know, we had experimented. I mean, Google's got the famous, you know, 20% of your time is yours to do whatever you want with. I think that's where that thinking comes from, because you do need to work on the business and you do have like regular boring problems that need to be solved. You know, if like at Whiplash, we ship like 50,000 packages a month, and if X percent are costing this company this much money, then obviously we have to fix that. But that can't be the only thing you do, right? Because that is going to be stagnation and it's going to be boring. And so, you know, we had experimented with this idea called Feature Fridays, which just meant basically Friday that you could do whatever you wanted. And, you know, on Whiplash in some way, but, you know, giving everybody the freedom to just kind of pursue their creative projects. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to maintain that just because something is always on fire, it seems like. And the company is kind of growing faster than the team. And we need to get back to that, because you do have to have that. Some kind of balance, some kind of creative outlet. And I think actually really good things happen. I think it's harder to quantify, but it could be where the best things happen in the company. I mean, still on my Google example, I mean, that's where Gmail came from, you know? And obviously it's a huge portion of the company now that no one would have made a rational decision to work on at that time.
Yeah, exactly. So this is something you guys are actively going to... It's hard though to get out of that cycle, right? Of you're growing and you have to keep working on the growth, but at the same time, if you never start working on those that 20%, then you never start.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, we're having it. We were talking about it Friday. We had some server issues, and you know, doing things like when the servers are on fire that we've been talking about doing for 6 months. And why does it have to be like the freak out panic situation that gets those server updates done? You know, we've known we've had scalability issues. We've talked about how we're going to solve them, and something about it, we don't make it a priority. And I think it's because there's too many priorities, right? Every time you open your email, there's like, you know, 20 new things that you could be working on, which are important. They're all important. So I think that's actually what I need to be learning as a CEO is how to scale the admin side of the company. I don't have as much experience with what I'm doing now. You know, Whiplash is right now larger than any company I've run previously. And it's a different way of solving problems. And I think I have a lot to learn as far as operating at that new scale.
Yeah. And I guess it is either getting it, or it is very like process oriented, as in written processes for everything at this point.
Yeah. And I think I've done a good job of that on the sort of mechanical side, you know, as far as hourly employees, like what they are doing, and there is processes of everything, but now it's more like, what is our process on writing a new feature? And I guess I don't have as much experience working with knowledge workers and trying to actually build, you know, beautiful, new, complex things. We don't have the process around those things. You know, daily operations are pretty process oriented, but not that creative energy.
Yeah. Very, very cool. How many like employees do you guys have at this point?
I think last payroll there was about 40.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
And that's a lot of folks in the warehouse, you know, packing orders. I think there's like five of us, maybe six of us on the admin side.
And how many warehouses? One?
So three. We've got two in the US, and then we just opened in London, UK with a partner.
Nice. I love it, man. I love it. All right, James. Well, this has been a blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you.
Sure.
This idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, right, we're always, I feel, projecting our success into the future. And much like the horizon, as you walk towards it, it continues to disappear in front of you. So we always are, it's just like our success is always a month out when you get to open up that new warehouse, or in 6 months when you hit that next revenue goal, or when you hire your 100th employee. But right before you hit that goal, you always set bigger, loftier ones into the future. And so we end up, and I know we have to push forward and we always need to be moving, but at the same time, we end up in this gap where we're never quite see ourselves as successful, no matter what we accomplish. Mm-hmm. So James, you've come a long way since starting your punk rock grocery store at 17. And I would love to know if you could stop right now, look back at everything you've learned, the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows, and tell me how you feel about everything up till this very moment.
I mean, it depends what time of day you ask that question, you know. Right now it's 9 o'clock in the morning and I feel great, you know. So yeah, I mean, I'm not thrilled. I think I've done some cool stuff. I think everything I've worked on has been, you know, smaller and less impactful on the global scale. I mean, so you have to know that when I went to start my first business, I was doing that to change the world. Like maybe my technique sucked and maybe it was like hopelessly naive, but that was what I felt inside, that I was going to, you know, change the world diet by opening this grocery store. And I don't think I accomplished that, you know. I think I've, you know, provided good jobs for a lot of really good people, and I think we've pleased a lot of customers over the time. But I mean, as far as a legacy, that's not a lot. That's not a lot to leave.
Right, but I know people are listening, going to be like, "Are you kidding me, man? Like, look at what you've done. Like, look at how far you've come from like a place in Michigan to running like Whiplash and starting Whiplash from literally from nothing."
Yeah.
So
I mean, I guess it's that like dissatisfaction with your output is inherent to people who are trying to accomplish big things. I mean, I think the reason I was able to start, you know, a $4 million company is because I was trying to start a, you know, $400 million company, right? So it's like everything while setting those huge goals, let's just say you're always going to accomplish 10% of what you attempt to accomplish. So it helps you accomplish more, right? You can say like, oh, compared to somebody else, like you actually did really, really well. You're like, but yeah, but I was trying to do so much more.
But also when you hit 400 million, you're going to want a billion.
Yeah, no, totally.
That's totally. That's,
I mean,
it's the shifting
goalposts. And I get that. I mean, I do have moments where I look back and say, okay, well, you're freaking out because the sales program isn't working as well as you want. And like, we're trying to raise money right now and I can't tell how well that's going. It might be fine. It's hard for me to judge. And then I do step back and like, well, wait a minute. You just had the best year you've ever had. Like, maybe don't be too hard on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the struggle. I don't know that that ever goes away. I mean, you read like this, you know, Steve Jobs book, and it's the same thing where he's like, you know, built the largest company in the world, and he's like, I just don't know if we got it right.
Exactly. And he left a lot of hateful people in the process behind him. So
yeah,
not always a win.
No, and honestly, the you know, history looking back, I think Bill Gates is going to be the better man. I mean, Steve Jobs died building a huge yacht in a giant gaudy office. And as much as I've always been his guy, Bill Gates is going to die trying to solve malaria. Like that's crazy.
He might even do it.
And actually, yeah, he'll have done it, right? He'll be onto something else.
Because he's a billionaire and he's using that money for good.
And I think that's like so inspiring. I don't know. I saw myself kind of change my, I still buy Apple products, but as far as like who's got my heart, it's definitely Bill Gates these days. He's like, he's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. And he gets a bad rap. Eh? He's not the hip young guy anymore.
No, he's not. He's not cool, but
he is.
Like, that's not really the important thing, right? Like he's actually, I don't know. He's incredibly smart and good person. And like, goddamn, that's who we need out there.
Exactly. All right, James, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Can you specifically tell the listener where to find out about your business and also where to reach out to you?
Yeah. So Whiplash is at whiplashmerch.com. That's MERCH.com. And you can find me at james@whiplashmerch.com.
Excellent. And also Twitter, Dynamic Dynamics.
Twitter is Dynamic Dynamics.
Awesome. VGKids.com, previous business. I will link to that in the show notes as well as Whiplash Merch and James at Whiplash Merch. So reach out to him, ask him some questions, bug him. He's got nothing to do. He's just, you know.
That's good.
All right, James, thank you so much for taking the time, man. I really, really do appreciate it. And just please keep doing what you're doing, man.
Great, man. Thanks, John. This has been fun.
Ooh, that was a lot of fun. James, thank you so much again for joining me. And something about talking to a former punk rocker is now running very, very, very cool business. It really, it's home. It's good. I love it. So that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And I hope you got as much out of that as I did. James is a very, very, very smart dude and a very, very smart entrepreneur. And there's a lot we could all learn from the way he's starting and running businesses. And I love the idea of I start companies that I wish existed. So I went back through this conversation again and listened to it, and I was looking for something. And as I was listening back, there was one thing that James said, and it really, really, really stood out to me. There was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I mean, I think it's like anything. Like the fear of the thing is bigger than the thing itself, and that you have to just look it straight on. I think that was something that maybe I still do sometimes, where you're so worried about something you don't want to confront it, and then you like push it out, push it further and further back. And like once you like square your shoulders and stare it down, it's a solvable problem. And I think most problems are.
And that's the hack. James, James, James. I love this. The fear of the thing is bigger than the thing itself. And when you finally fess up to it and square your shoulders and look it straight on, you realize that it's a solvable problem. And most problems are. Wow. We talk about this a lot, and the idea of doing the work that matters to you and the work that matters to the world. It's what we all have inside of us, and that feeling you get when you don't do those things, when you don't step up and do it. And usually when you don't do that, it's because there's this fear, and there's this fear of this unknown thing that we actually build up bigger than the actual thing itself. And I absolutely love this. This is it. This is how you have to do it. You literally have to just face that fear, square your shoulders, and just take it head on. And you will understand that everything that you're propping up as reasons why you can't are totally solvable problems, and you can and will do it. James, that is awesome. Thank you. All right, that was an absolute blast. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Go there, check out James's episode, and get onto the email list. I would love to have you on there, and I'd love to be able to write to you every Sunday. It's some of my best work, and it's going out. And that also gives you direct access to me if you want it. You can hit reply to any of those emails and ask me questions. Tell me what you think of the show. Tell me what you'd... If there's a guest you'd like to hear, by all means, hit me up. Or if there's a question, I'm just not asking my guests, and you'd love to hear it. That's it. That's the open gate right there. You can just send me an email, and I would love to hear from you. But the way to do that is to get on that email list and hit reply, even to the welcome email, if you wish. It comes straight to my laptop, straight to my phone, and I'd love to have a conversation with you. All right, it's been a blast. I thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate the fact that you chose to spend the time with James and I today. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.